And so I think the more generous you can be with your work, and the more open, and the more open you are to feedback, and that process of letting go, and like, okay, you know, I had an instructor, Hunter Wimmer, who would always say, kill your babies. And I think that's like such a great piece of advice.
Welcome to the Closer and Closer podcast, a podcast about expanding your creative capacity. Each week, we interview inspiring creatives to help you grow your freelance career. All right, let's get into the episode.
Welcome to the podcast, Kelly. I'm so excited to have you.
Thanks so much, Andrea and Dave. It's so great to see you. And I'm so happy to be here.
Right on.
Yeah. So you're kind of starting off a series of clients coming on the podcast. And I'm really excited to kind of kick this off with you because we had, you know, a great 5x5. And I know you're a super talented designer and you have a lot of great insight to share.
Clearly it wasn't on that 5x5 because I was going to ask how we know the wonderful Kelly.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a client. She's a 5x5 fan and not a Dave fan yet, but hopefully by the end of this podcast.
I was waiting for you to say that. That comes.
Awesome. So to start us off from your bio, the listeners heard earlier, they'll know that you are like a brilliant multi-hyphenate with so many different skill sets. Can you walk us through the journey of kind of acquiring all these different hats that you wear and how you just got to your position at Envoy today?
Absolutely. You're so sweet. Brilliant. Yes. To be determined, but yeah, I always like to say my path was very long and winding. So not to be too much of a bore, but it truly did start as like a very young child. Mm-hmm. So around the age of 3, I got it into my mind that I was going to be a dancer. And you know, kids come up with these things all of the time, but it was like a very earnest wish of mine. So a way to exemplify that is there would be times where we would run into, say, like one of those policemen on the street, and they like tried to give me a badge with, they're like, you're a cute little toddler. And I literally started screaming, and I was like, no, I can't be a policeman. Like, I have to be a dancer.
Oh my goodness.
I know. My parents were like, what is happening?
The most passionate child on the planet.
Most passionate. Yeah. Same thing happened on the airplane with the wings, the whole thing. So yeah, it was just like stuck in my head. And so I pursued this throughout my school age, K through 12, and then actually even beyond. Which was the impetus for me to go to LA. I was pursuing dance. So I was taking millions of classes, jazz ballet.
Millions?
Maybe.
Sorry.
Not hyperbole at all. Yeah. so many throughout the years, you know, competitive dance teams, what have you. I even got to do a couple summers in New York. And so, yeah, that was my focus. But what ended up happening was I got to LA, you know, and as you saw, like throughout my LinkedIn, like I did do college. I needed to check that box. And also I was very curious about that experience, but I was doing the audition scene and the classes, and I was doing some troops and stuff. But what I'd realized in the class is that everyone else around me, like dance was their entire life. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. when I was in LA, I was doing a million things. I was actually doing design.
Really?
Yeah. I like didn't have a name for it. So LA is just a really wonderful place with tons of creatives all in the mix. Everyone's kind of trying to do their thing. So I really got the opportunity to meet a lot of different types of people and do a lot of different things. So for example, I was doing fashion illustration for a small designer. I was doing for another designer, like t-shirt design and, you know, some logo design. And then for some student filmmakers, I was doing storyboarding. And so I had my hand in a lot of things. And, you know, I ultimately realized if I'm really going to do dance, like I have to put it all in. And I don't, that's just not me. Like I'm just not there. So it took a very, like, you know, a very long time to realize that. And then, you know, you go through that process of kind of looking back, and I realized that I was always doing design. So then again, going back to childhood, I was at a very early age copying magazines. Like I loved Sports Illustrated for children, and I would make my own magazine with like all the neon colors.
That's awesome.
From the '80s. I would do like all the dark maps with my friends. Like we would do sleepovers and we'd like, let's do a map of your house and we'll sneak around. You know, it was probably like 10
PM. Yeah, that's so cute.
Yeah. And then I was on yearbook in junior high. So like old school yearbook where we had the wax markers, was doing like literal layouts. It was amazing. I did photography, like totally loved that, taking pictures of all my friends. And then we went to yearbook camp, which like as an adult sounds terribly nerdy.
There's a yearbook camp?
Yeah. Yearbook camp.
I love it.
That's awesome.
It was really fun. And then, yeah, and then in high school, I was publicity chair. So in other words, it's like drawing posters. So once I started to realize all these things, I was like, oh, I've always been doing this. I've always had this skill. Just nobody told me that was something you could do for a living. Mm-hmm. So yeah, one thing led to another. And then I ended up going back to school for it.
Holy smokes. Like very rarely does design go back that far for the people that I've talked to who do it.
Yeah.
Because you're right. Like nobody knows that it's a job.
Right.
And even when I was in school, my teachers were like, you'll do stuff when you get out of here. It's like, what kind of stuff? Like, you know, you'll get like design jobs. What kind of jobs? Yeah. So it's really cool to hear somebody, because you hear all the time, right, Andrea, like the artist be like, oh, you know, I drew pictures. I drew on the inside of my mom's womb. And, you know, we put a flashlight up. We could see it. Like they start super young. And it's just cool to hear like the designer version of that.
Yeah. I know it's kind of funny to think about it when you go back, you're like, oh yeah, magazines, maps, stickers, like it was all there.
Did you rip out the sports cards from the Kids Sports Illustrated when you would get an issue of it? Remember they had like the perforated cards?
No, I feel like I was so into like designing what a feature article might look like or the pictures.
That's so awesome, by the way.
I don't remember the card. I actually am not that into sports, so I really don't know how
my parents... That became your favorite.
Yeah. It might have been because maybe that was like one of the only children's magazines back then.
That's totally.
Yeah.
They did have these cards. It was always like the athlete, and they, for some reason, couldn't feature the team, so that was always Photoshopped out or however they did it back then. And then the cards were perforated, and you would try to rip them so carefully because the edges, you didn't want to bend them. It's like, yeah. Anyway,
I want to skip around a little bit. Sorry, Dave. I'm going to hijack your question because I feel like not your question, but I'm going to switch the order a little bit because I think this is goes really well with what you were talking about. Your dance history. I was also a dancer when I was younger, up until I was 18. Mm-hmm. And same thing, like competitive dance, all that fun stuff. It was like my whole life when I was growing up.
Amazing.
And I was wondering, like, for you, how that experience of maybe you still dance in your free time, and I just am not aware of that. And if you do, like, tell us about that. And if not, what was that feeling like of having to let go of that passion that you had kind of, you know, been working so hard for and been like really dreaming of your whole life? Like, did you struggle with that decision? How did you get through that? How did you kind of, you know, like learn to let go of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like I mentioned, it was very much, you know, I kind of frame it as your quarter life crisis. It was pretty existential and it was a bit heartbreaking. You know, because like you said, I had held onto this so tightly since a very, very young age. But I think what it comes down to is eventually that maturity and that realizing, like I said, you know, I was in class and I loved the dancers that I was around. Like everyone's energy is so fun and it's so wild and so lovely and so accepting and inclusive. So that to me, I always felt at home. But when you compare, like I said, like I was into like all these different things and then every day they were just like going to class, going to auditions, like making sacrifices in terms of, you know, like rent and like just living with many people. And like as you get older and you kind of realize like, oh, there's different things that I want, or I'm not, I guess I can't really like put it all in that way to, and also I was like really terrified of auditioning.
Yeah.
Which like does not
bode well for a dancer.
Yeah, at all. Like in LA or New York. I should have gone to New York because actually like I was much better like classical jazz and like Broadway. Like that would have been me. But then in LA it's all about personality.
Yeah, it's all commercial.
I like those little poses. I wish our listeners could have seen that. Like classical jazz.
Kinetic. Like yeah. I do that in Art Direction a lot. I'm like, so here, like I'm out still. But yeah, I mean, I remember in auditions, like I would literally be like, you can go ahead of me. Like go in front of me.
Yeah. Does anybody not get just devastated by nerves? And I would imagine auditioning for anything would just be terrible.
Oh, it's awful. I mean, yeah, I guess those who are good at it can like just shut it down and like do their best. But like there were auditions where I remember one, like it was you and another person and you were like headed towards the person who was deciding whether you stay or you go. And they were just like, go, stay, go.
Oh, geez.
And that was the first pass. And you had to do like this across the floor combination. And of course I got like go. And I was like, well, I guess that's my day.
Yeah. I remember, you guys remember, I made it to like the final five on American Idol. Do you guys remember this? And I just, I'm lying.
Dave's hobby is lying to our guests and to everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm very gullible.
Oh, no.
Andre doesn't know this about me. I did. I made it to the final five.
Stop it.
No, like, you remember my number one single, Art Is My Life, but I spelled it L-Y-F-E.
Oh, yeah. You actually started that trend.
Yeah.
Misspelling things on purpose.
Yeah.
Anyways, you mentioned this. You just said that you were really kinetic still and that you kind of, that translates into your art direction career. Mm-hmm. And this is really interesting because last week we had Abraham Lule on the podcast, who's one of the artists on our roster. Yeah. And he also is a dancer. Like he, not really professionally anymore, but you know, he like taught for years and loved it. And in his lettering, you can really tell that like there's a physicality to it and like a certain movement that, you know, we talked about it being informed by his dance career.
Yeah.
Could you dive a little bit deeper into how, and if at all, you know, your dance training influences what you're doing now and like your art direction and your graphic design?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like the best way to kind of express what goes on in my brain. Cause even in conversation, there's a lot of times like in my thinking, I do this a lot. Like I'm like pulling thoughts down.
Yeah.
And I think there's something in my body that like needs to be physical to find those words perhaps and express that. And I think in terms of the crossover between design and dance, dance is a very emotive art form, right? You're taking musicality and physicality in order to express emotion and tell a story. And so I think it activates kind of that same space in my body if I'm approaching a new project and thinking about that story and that narrative and what is that thread and kind of like that beginning to the end. And there's a movement through that, even in design, even in a 2D, you know, and sometimes a 3D space. But yeah, I appreciate like that connection and that thread through it. And perhaps that might be a bit of the crossover.
Typographic choreography.
Exactly. I mean, in type, of course, when you're just setting beautiful type, it moves across the page.
It does.
Yeah.
So two things. One thing, it's one thing now, because the other thing the audience will never get to hear about. but the other thing, and I don't know if this is, I would like this confirmed, and it was before Google when I heard this, so I've never thought to Google it, but I heard Jackson Pollock would throw paint because he was trying to mimic the natural movement of a dancer. Like when the paint was in the air, like that line and swirl and undulation through the air was supposed to be mimicking like a ballerina. But for such a gruff guy, I it's weird that he landed on that, but maybe that's why he did it. Have you guys ever heard that?
I haven't, that particular, yeah.
Jackson Potluck. Look him up.
Who's that?
Yeah, never heard of him. Unfamiliar.
Cute.
No, yeah. And I think there is like always, you know, Abraham was talking about how, like, because he started his craft analog and like not digitally, it's still like he had a lot of that physicality, and it was a lot of the same like brain parts as well that he was using in dance and in lettering, which I thought was really interesting.
Right.
So I wouldn't be surprised if Jackson Pollock was taking a page out of Abraham's book, learning from him, obviously.
Yeah, that's he was known to do that. He's starting to rip me off now. Like, I'm going to Jackson's Instagram. It's like, this is so Dave Arcade that he's doing. But let's get back to our guest, the wonderful Kelly Wahlstrom. So you have a Master of Fine Arts in graphic design, which is awesome. I have a lowly BS, a Bachelor of Science. Isn't that weird? I have a Bachelor of Science in graphic design. I think it's because we're using computers in the early 2000s. Like, this is science.
This is science. Absolutely. Ours was called like new media.
Yeah, that's still better. I tried to get into the school you went to, but I ended up having to go to the Art Institute in Orange County. So
the Art Institute,
they're not accredited anymore. Well, it makes me mad. Why did I pay off my student loans? But luckily, I don't have to use them. But my loans are paid off. They owe me that money back. Really. Anyway, so you have an MFA, which sounds cooler than a BS also. But I'm kind of guessing that folks don't always know what you do when you say, this is my profession. Just like we were talking about earlier. It's like, what do designers do? I ran into this all the time with my friends. Like, what do you do? It's like, I don't know. And I even had a job in the real world. Yeah. So would you mind taking a moment and just kind of talk about your role as a graphic designer? Just probably should have done this at the top, but hey, we're getting to the GUI Center at the right time, probably.
Yeah.
And then kind of what a day in the life looks like for you at Envoy. Cause I know you do art direction. You have a ton of work that the world is going to start seeing here in the coming months. So just let us know.
Yes. All right. What is a graphic designer? I know it's great. Right. I always say like, this is, it's like the mom test. You say to your mom, oh, I'm a graphic designer. So everyone, I think, always default. And they're like, oh, advertising. And you're like, ish. Like, I get it. I get why that seems, you know, or the Don Draper of the world, which we were just talking about Don Draper yesterday with my team.
I love Don Draper.
Oh, I know.
He's always so mean.
To that, yeah. Just like come into a room and own it.
Yeah. A lot of people think I look exactly like him. That is a side note.
Just asterisk. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I love this question. I was thinking about this. Like, I think in the simplest of terms, which I remember in school, they were like, what is a graphic designer? Okay. It's taking, you know, type in pictures and then making a thing. But if you back that up and I think make it a bit more about like what it ultimately is, and maybe this is a little bit more conceptually, but again, it's telling stories, and the way in which we do that, the tools which we have are type and pictures, illustration, lettering, all of these things. So graphic designer, you know, I, in the framing of how my career has gone, I think a happy space for me was like in the studio or agency world. So like a company comes to you, whether it's a small business or a larger company, and they say, hey, we need a thing. Maybe it's we are starting a product and it needs some branding and identity, or we have some branding and identity, but now we were first in our space, but now our competitors are coming after us and we need a refresh because we need to like be out front in front of all that. So then the designer, and I think this is where it gets really interesting, is we are also problem solvers, right? So like
big time.
So we feed off of, okay, what is the problem you're trying to solve? And let's do that in a really creative way. So that comes out also in like a lot of different mediums. So that might be within type, and we're like redoing the logo, but it's wonderful because it's like, what is that logo saying? And what is that type treatment doing? And what is that emotion? And ultimately, like, what do you want your audience to take away or remember from you? How are you going to be differentiated? The color palette that you use, is it going to be like a happy color palette that people are going to feel really light when they see it, or very youthful and very playful? Or is it going to be like much more sophisticated and, you know, a little bit more serious, and you feel refined and you feel elevated? all of these different things are things that we take into consideration. And I think, you know, start with that, like that mood boarding process and that conceptual thinking, and then it turns into the execution. And then I think what people, you know, who aren't in this world too need to understand is it truly takes a village. On a project, like you might be lead designer, your concept may have been chosen, you know, when you present to the clients and talk through your work and everything, but you're going to have a team of people that are helping you get it across the finish line, whether it's supporting designers in the studio, whether it's your amazing production person who gets your files and it's like pulling his hair out in the corner and cursing all the designers, but then he makes magic happen or she makes magic happen. And, you know, photographers that get brought in, animators, like dev people, like it's so many folks. And I think for me, that's what's so exciting about design, because you're just working with all these amazing creative brains to come together to put out something beautiful and functional in the world.
Yeah. Wow. I love that answer. And especially the part, like you wouldn't think from looking at, like, I'm thinking of my friend, Christina Arth, because she made the PayPal logo. So that's like in my head, but she didn't just like make that by herself, right? Like you would think that it would be illustrators who have like a team of people, just like, cause there's so many images and all these ideas and there's so much to draw, but that's a one man show. But design, you know, like the most I learned about design was not working in like a design boutique. We had partnered at the last place I worked at with a design boutique. So I was in the advertising wing, but all their work was on the walls, and it would be the team with their arms folded, looking at all of the comps of like the possible logos and type treatments on the wall. And just like, I don't know if like this little thing works. And then the designer's like, well, I like that housing for the logo because blah, blah, blah. And it's almost like the simpler it gets, the more blind you are to like things that may or may not work so you really do need a team. It seems strange.
Yeah.
When you see the final product, that's just so simple and clean.
Right.
It's such a whittling process, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's such a learning too, as you get more mature into your career. I think when you start off and you're young and you're a young gun and you're like, I got to prove myself, I got to do this all on my own, like this is everything I'm putting out in the world, and like, that's what's really important. But as you mature, like right now, you know, yes, I may be heading a team, but I'm always throwing stuff back if I, you know, get the chance to work on something at this point. And I'm like, can you please put eyes on this? Because you just don't know, you know?
Yeah, totally.
You can be in your world and doing your thing, but then it needs somebody else to come in and to check it. And so I think the more generous you can be with your work, and the more open you are to feedback, and that process of letting go and like, okay, you know, I had an instructor, Hunter Wimmer, who would always say, kill your babies. And I think that's like such a great piece of advice. That's and then that whole, you know, the learning of just not taking things personally. So having that.
It's so hard. It's like, as an art, because you're making art. But yeah, I mean, you're like the listeners will hear this in your intro, but you're the head of brand design Envoy. Like you're the person who's like, yes or no.
I am for the visual piece of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
that like? Like how big's your team? Maybe I should start there.
Our team is six. This was absolutely like an accidental that I fell into.
No.
Yeah, well, I mean, in terms of, I started at Envoy as an IC. So I joined as a senior designer. And my headspace at that time was to become the best designer, to become the best at my craft, to keep going. You know, I had started in agencies. I love agencies. I thought I'd always be like a studio agency brat. Sure. I just love that everyone at that space is like working towards the thing, and you all commiserate and ride those ups and downs together. Happy hours, all the things, what have you, staying late until midnight. It was just like a very community space, and that is what drives my heart. So to go in-house, it was a big step and a big decision for me for a lot of different reasons. Again, like as you get older, I was on baby number two, and you know, living in the Bay Area, you're like, okay, there's other I have to take into consideration when it comes to my work. So, going in house. So it was a senior designer, came into an amazing team. It was like such a different experience because it was both product designers and a few of us visual, what they call visual designers, which I always thought was funny because I'm like, the differentiation, like it's such a tech thing.
Right.
The visual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, we're all visual.
I'm like, what does this mean? Oh,
okay. Designers,
front end stuff. Like, yeah, there's all these like technical terms now I've learned. But yeah, the product design world was like my, I was like, I don't understand what you all do. Buttons and user flows and research and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But I mean, ultimately we're all in the same. And what I learned is like, a designer is a designer is a designer. Like, we all thrive on that problem solving. We all would get together. We all had that weird, quirky sense of humor, like just weird things would make us laugh, you know? And so it felt very much like a community, our little crew. So this is a long way of saying, you know, over the course of a year, we went through some transition. The pandemic happened. People came and went. And when my manager at the time, who I love dearly, Amy Devereaux, her and I, like, both in our hearts, she came from agency world as well, and then fell into the startup land. So we would always, just commiserate about that experience and be like, we just want like this space to be our internal agency. Like, we want to approach this. But she left to do her thing. She's doing freelance now and killing it. And so then it was me and our web designer, Megan Hendricks, who is amazing. And so basically what happened, Micah, our VP, we're under the marketing team right now. He was like, you know, if you want to throw your hat in the ring for this manager position, like, I would totally support you. And I was like, I don't know, my God, like, I want to just be a designer. I just want to do the things and make the things. But what I realized after some good thinking is that I had helped create this new rebrand, and then somebody would come in and be like, you know, there's a risk. You're like, blow this up and start again. Or like, now I'm going to start telling you how to do this. And I was like, no. You know, that's when I like was like, this is my baby, and I'm going to deliver it. So then I threw my hat, and I was like, all right. So I had to go through the whole interview process with all the team. That's why that's the most recent portfolio you've seen. And like, we had to pitch it to the CEO, all this stuff. But yeah, here I am today, a year and a few months in. Team of six. This team is all built now from folks that I've hired. They're absolutely incredible, coming from all different spaces. And yeah, you know, I still have the dream of like this little like brand studio or whatever you want to call it, like within, to create that really safe space for our creative team to explore and still play and still have fun. To me, that's so important.
Yeah. That's a huge thing, right? Like when the kids arrive at work every day, it's just like, they're excited and they're working on cool stuff. And even if it doesn't, I love that you said that, like this place to play, because even if it doesn't work or if it doesn't move forward, like, they got to make this really cool thing and advance their skills, and they were excited for a minute before you got to tell them, hey, it's over,
we're not doing it.
Like, I hope you had fun, but we have some partners and some other stuff, so
yeah. I have a follow-up question for this. Have been some of like the happiest surprises of stepping into this role? Like, what are some of the things that you've fallen in love with that you maybe didn't think were going to be in your wheelhouse?
So, as I mentioned, like, the biggest fear was letting go of doing the work. Mm-hmm. Because like, I love to play. I love to test my skills. I love to still push in illustration work, find new textures, the type, all that. Like, let me have that playground. So I was really afraid of that. But what I am so delighted and surprised by is the energy and the inspiration that I find now from my team and the amazing work that they do. We have someone like Jake Gavino, who is an illustrator in his own right. He's got his own thing. And then what he brings, and also like, how he took maybe what I was, you know, there were a few months when I was like doing manager and like the visual design stuff all by myself. So and then to see him like take some of this work and move it into this like totally new space and get a new perspective on it. And I'm like, oh, amazing. So he's like pushing the brand in that way. And then we have Megan Tebbis, who is just like a natural talent. She does lettering. She's getting into animation. And again, like her fresh perspective to like push things. And then we have our incredible web team. And then we just brought on a video producer. So now I've just got like all of this work that's coming in, and we sit and crit, and we get to like throw stuff up on the, you know, the virtual wall at this point, our screen. But still we get to like get in a room and chat about it. And I am thriving off of being able to help bring these people all together and to have this like crossover. You know, it's so cool when somebody, you know, say like Jake, who's a really illustrator at heart, can comment on video and vice versa. Bringing all the folks together.
That's cool. It's you don't really know what you don't realize what you know until you're put in charge. And then you're like, whoa, I have a whole like toolkit here, and I have this sword and I have this blowtorch. Like there's all kinds of stuff. I don't know who has a sword and blowtorch. But a good leader who has like a deep skill set I totally hear you. It's like when you have to give up the art a little bit, it's a huge sacrifice, but that's the role of a leader, right? You have to make that sacrifice for these up and coming designers who are going to benefit from all of your knowledge. And then they're your little children who go on and make great things.
Absolutely. I know. And then, I don't know where my mind is.
No. Well, and I think that's such a great, I mean, I think that's something that you can really generalize to like any creative, right? Like, I feel like when you're so used to, when you work in creativity and you have that creative practice, it's so hard to let go of any piece of that. Like even, you know, some of the artists on our roster, when they first join, they're like scared to give up, you know, like any part of the project management or like any part of their freelance career, because you just get so used to doing it all yourself. And like, you get so into that craft. But I think that's such a great reminder that like at the end of the day, collaboration in any sense is only going to make things richer. Like even if you don't end up going with whatever this other person's suggesting, or you push back, it's only going to make things better at the end of the day. It's never going to detract from what you're trying to do.
Absolutely. Well,
except along the way when it does detract and you fight about stuff,
which is necessary. Yeah, and then you let that person go and they weren't a good fit, but the problem is
you don't have to let them go. The whole thing is, it's like childbirth, right? It's like, it's super painful. I mean, I've had 4 kids. I can tell you.
Have birthed 4 kids.
I've birthed 4 kids. No, but yeah, that I think any project where you don't have pain points, where you have disagreement, and it's if you guys have read Creativity Inc., it's like, or listen to it on in your car, like I have, Ed Catmull talks about the brain trust and how on teams, as long as you have that trust that nobody is saying anything to hurt your feelings or to try to advance their career, as long as it's all for the benefit of pushing the final product to the best possible place. If you have an understanding with your team that that's exactly what you're doing and no one ever deviates from that, then you can have those painful conversations where you're like, dude, it's just this type isn't working, or this color isn't working. Like, we gotta go back. And that person might be bummed out, but then it's better as a result. And you go through that pain and then you create great stuff together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that is going back to what I was saying about not taking things personally.
Yeah. And
to your point, like, it's about the work. It isn't about the personal, it's about the problem we're trying to solve. And that's another thing why I think crit is so just paramount to the whole process, because through that, and also I believe strongly too in designers presenting to clients, because it's that language and being able to speak to your decisions, be able to explain your rationale in a way that isn't all design speak, right? Like that's that Don Draper moment. Yeah. Where you like sell your ideas in, and that's in a really incredibly important spill. I've worked at studios where like they did not let the design, and I was like, this is my work. Like, I have to present it. What are you talking about?
It's an old school mentality.
I guess so, for sure. But like, you know, in-house, you don't necessarily have that, but I do try to create moments for that. Like, we just had our designer, Ryan Huntsinger, web designer, present that to the stakeholders, you know, and he spoke through all his decisions, he talked through. So it's really important for me to create those moments where the designers can present their work. Because not only does it give them credit too for all of their thinking and all the work that they put into it, but yeah, it builds those skills. How to talk about your work is just as important as like what you're doing.
Are you getting this sense, Andrea, that Kelly's like the best boss ever?
Oh, 100%.
Like seriously, like I would love to work for you. Like if I'm like, oh, Kelly could be my boss. I don't care. That's fine. Let's do it. Like, I can tell you're a kind person and you're super down to earth and you're funny and you're fun to talk to. And then, you know, design, it's like, yeah, you're just, I could tell you're a good boss. It's a compliment.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I hope so.
I know I've been doing a lot of skipping around, so sorry.
You're fine.
I'll work on it for the next one. But I kind of, since we're on the topic of Envoy and your team and kind of like how y'all work together and bring mm-hmm. ideas to the table, I wanted to ask, you know, I know that tech companies, especially like in recent years, sometimes get a bad rap for their creative. Yeah. It's kind of like become its own style. And it's, you know, we see a lot of it because there's so many startups and tech companies in the world. How do you feel about that? Do you think that's like a misplaced, you know, sentiment? And then how do you and your team work to set Envoy apart from other tech companies?
What a good question.
Such a good question. Well, I will start by saying, like, I'm not above thinking some of that, right? Because, like, that was my hesitation too. Going into this job, I had been like, I am a true designer. I'm not going to do tech. And then you're in the Bay Area, and then and then you notice your friends are all, you know, and like really talented people are going into tech jobs, and so you're like, is there something here? Like, I'm not sure. But Envoy reached out, and my whole journey with that is it was the recruiter email, and which is really funny. So the recruiter that recruited me to Envoy was actually my recruiter at the Academy of Art.
Oh, cool.
Full circle.
That's crazy. Yeah. Meant to be.
I know. So meant to be. She's incredible. But her email was like, is this company Envoy? We're doing stuff to like make workplaces better and more delightful. And you know, designers are like such a sucker for the word delight. And I know it's so overused, but it really like tug it. I was like, maybe this isn't an evil tech company. So that's how I fell here. But I think it's so interesting. So I think because, and this is kind of maybe the, like the beast of the internet too, but because like everything's so out there and visually available all the time, you know, whether it's on social or Google or what have you, the designers at a lot of tech companies are seeing a lot of the same. And then you're getting pressure from maybe your marketing teams or whatever else is telling you to, you know, maybe you are the marketing team and the designer all in one. That's definitely a thing. And it's like, well, what can I do to get out there fastest? So I don't fault that, you know, for happening. For me, I'm looking at this, the places that are really inspiring me and the places that have recruited the names that I know and the people that are like the incredible talent. So I'm like, they're intentionally, you know, use spaces like, Airbnb and Dropbox and Intercom. Like those are the places I'm looking at because they're pushing things forward, MailChimp. And you know that the creatives there, Zendesk, I could keep, you know, Zapier. There's the creatives there and they understand design and branding it, and there's a heart to it. And then too, they're not afraid to partner, you know, like MailChimp brought in Collins. Like there's a nice crossover with some of these tech companies when there is the budget available. So that's where I'm at in Envoy, like what I aspire to, why I love partnering with Closer and Closer and the artists on the roster. I want to bring in that level of talent to elevate. And I'm really grateful because our CEO, Larry, cares about design. And, you know, that was the other piece of the email. This is a design-led company. So he's an engineer come CEO, but yeah, he really cares. And like, he'll pull me aside and be like, my friends saw Envoy's work. Like, I'm so excited you guys are, you know, and I'm like, thanks, Larry. Like,
yeah.
So, you know, it's like, he's excited. Like, that's just a good vibe. So.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, I absolutely agree. And I think, you know, again, we see a lot of this and Dave, I feel like you've talked about this a couple of times, but with our artists as well. It's like, sometimes, you know, they'll be like, oh, but we're not like real artists, or like, you know, they're like Chidi Wayne, who's an incredible artist. He does both commercial and fine art, joined the roster. And he's the first, I think, artist that we have on the roster that also does fine art.
Yeah.
And all the artists, I mean, when we announced that he was joining the roster, they were like, oh my God, like we have a real artist, and you know, it's half joking.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I think it's so easy for these styles and like the more commercial aspects of design and art to get a bad rep, when like in reality, like that's kind of just how everything goes, you know, everything is commercialized and like everything is going to have a certain style or look. And it's, you know, it's not because those artists are like uninspired or bad artists or anything like that. They're pushing the boundaries on this very specific niche. And I think that's amazing. And that shouldn't be discounted, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely not. I know. I know everyone likes to like talk poorly about big bodies and small heads, but like when that first came out, like that was awesome. You were like, what? You're pushing like scale and proportion in like the coolest way. And then, you know, flattery is the highest form of, or excuse me,
imitation.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, I totally agree. Like we're all just out here trying to do our thing.
People love hating on the thing that's successful because it's successful.
It's true. And then they want to knock it down. We see it with the celebrities all the time.
Or you could just take my route and just not draw people.
Yeah.
Just avoid the whole thing. Just draw machines and boxes.
Yeah, very different.
Don't have to worry about form. You guys, the quote you were looking for is limitation is the best form of flatware.
Okay.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah.
That's a Dave Arcade original. If anybody, if you see anybody using that on the internet,
well, you can't
tell them.
Yeah, you can't use it. You'll have to pay me a lot of money and Disney for some reason. You have to pay Disney too.
Obviously,
it all goes back to Disney.
All of us somehow. I don't know.
Dave, I'll hand it back to you because I feel like I've been, I don't know how to say the word, commandeering.
No, you're good. I like. I don't feel that way at all. If anyone's listening, it's not as if they're like, I can't believe how Andre has just been commandeering this whole episode.
Say it right?
Yeah, commandeer. It's like, I think that's when somebody's riding a motorcycle and you fly through the air with a Bruce Lee karate kick them that's off exactly the motorcycle and then you land on the bike. I think you've commandeered the bike.
That's exactly what I meant to say. So I'm glad it came across.
So I'm always interested in kind of what drives people.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of talked about some of these things. And so if we want to go back or expand, I kind of want to know what gets your heart pumping and what kind of makes you want to wrap up whatever you're doing to capitalize on that moment of inspiration. And we can even get into some themes that like typify those projects or those moments that inspire you. Designers, I find, are inspired by, it's not that illustrators aren't, but designers have all of these different sources that they kind of draw from.
Yeah.
And the ones I've met, it's like from music to like shoelaces. It's like, that's cool. You know, like, so I kind of, like, is there some, I think getting into some crossover of like what's near and dear to your heart and then what you do at Envoy is fine too. But I just want to know, like, I just want to hear you talk about what you like to make mm-hmm. and why you like to make it.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So if we frame it in terms of design and like at the top of a project, I think that's what, you know, going back to studio, that's what was so exciting every time a new client would come in is this possibility. So I would say possibility and the curiosity and the question of what could this be at the beginning is like so thrilling to me. We had a process at Hatch called Ways In, which was brought from kind of the advertising world, but essentially it was concepting and mood boarding. We would spend weeks pulling scrap.
Oh, that's the best.
It's the best. It's the best. Just images on images on images. And we'd make these decks and then we'd like go through them and curate. Nicole Flores, who was one of my design directors there, she really taught me how to look at scrap. So she would pull stuff from like the old annuals. She would always go back to the 60s, like the golden era. The
golden era, yeah.
Golden era. And she'd like bring something that maybe had a flower. And, you know, I'm not sure what the client is, but she'd be like, this flower could be this thing for that in the project. And so like before, I was just like kind of pulling aimless of like, this is beautiful.
Right.
I don't do that. But she taught me how to like take the image and then put it into what it could possibly be. And
so that's cool.
Yeah. I still get mind blown. She'd like bring like maybe just three pieces of scrap and it would be better than like, all of us had like this full pages of just, you know, splattering spaghetti everywhere. But yeah, just in that articulation too. So that to me is quite an exciting part of the process. And then like round one, then you get into like doing. And again, it's just like, get it all out there. That was another thing at Hatch. We would just do a million versions of the things, as you know. And something I learned from one of my favorite humans at my job at Paperpunk, Grace Hawthorne, and this was also terrifying. She would, you know, that whole idea of failing fast and early.
Yeah.
She'd like time box me and she'd be like, you got 10 minutes to do this thing. And I was like, what are you talking about? Yeah. Like, I need a week to figure this thing out, you know? And she's like, no, just do this. And so I learned to do that. So like combining all of these like different inputs, taught me how like to like get that round one and just like throw everything out and start to go back and refine. And you learn like time, you know, in that space, like time is your friend and your enemy sometimes, but, yeah, you can go back and whittle and refine and kind of do that. But if we're talking, then, you know, that's what jazzes me, I think, about the projects. But if we're talking about like Muse right now, to your point, like my intakes are a lot of stuff. Because of my kid. Well, one, my kids.
Sure.
When you have children, it just reopens that youth. So that's amazing.
Just a pause right there about how true that is.
Yes.
It is a key. It is a pathway back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a good way.
In an amazing way. Yes. As long as you can like take the patient, right? There's times sure. when you got to be an adult and you're like, just, we're done looking at the puddle. Like we're.
Yeah. Or they poop on the floor. You're like, you pooped on my floor.
Yes. Yeah. You're like, okay, I'm not gonna lose it. But like that opened up for me like children's books.
Yeah.
Like maybe that the stuff that I get is really for me, not that, you know. And I'm like, you can't, no, don't bend the you know, I'm like way too cautious with them, you know, if it's like a Paul Rand. Like
I just gotta say, I have this book called Mommy by Maurice Sendak, Where the Wild Things Are guy. And it's a elaborate pop-up book that he did that nobody knows about.
Yeah.
My wife got it for my son for Christmas. It's been on my shelf ever since.
Yeah. Yes. I guess. Yeah. I just got Listen the other day and I read it to them last night. I was like, okay, so this is one of mommy's favorite.
Don't bend it.
And designers, like, here's a lot. Don't touch it though. I'll read it to you. Yeah. This probably isn't good. This isn't. Yeah, there's that. So there's the children, books, music to your point, like again, with the kid theme, Pixar, that's a whole nother, like in the pandemic too, of just like, yep, they were pumping it out at one. Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah.
The amount of work going on in that studio. And two, yeah, the storytelling, the animation, all the artists, you know, and as a designer or artist, you just like, you know, all the work that went in. So that the music within that, I still am inspired by music. Like I'm all over the place. Like I'm like jazz from the 60s. I'm Lizzo here, Beyonce, like Harry Styles, you know, so I'm like very here and then that. And then I'm super like, I've started listening to like Italian vintage summer, you know, it's just like all over.
Love it.
But let's be honest, you also, no one brings it up, but I know you like The Cure and The Smiths.
Absolutely.
And U2. Yeah. They don't get the credit they deserve because everyone's like, well, I can't talk about The Cure, The Smiths, and U2 for some reason. It's like, yeah, but those are your favorite bands.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. Total like punk goth sort of vibe. And then the later iterations of that from the early 2000s. Yeah, I'm totally all over. Like, yeah,
I love it.
Emo on the inside. I Tori Amos in high school, like 1000%.
We've right. somehow discovered that like 90% of the Closer and Closer team was like emo and goth at some point, and we don't know how it happened. Yeah, like all of us were slightly pretty alternative at some point. Like Olivia is one of the only people that has been on the team in the last year that wasn't, and it's so funny because we always talk about like emo's not dead and like different bands that we used to listen to, and she's like, I don't get it, and you guys need to stop.
My God.
Are we talking like AFI emo, or are we talking?
Well, I'm definitely like more like a, I don't know, like I like Sleeping with Sirens and like Pierce the Veil in middle school and like things like that, but also like Green Day and like Blink 182, All Time Low, those kinds of things. I don't fully know all the references that Caitlin and Drew make because they're obviously a little bit older than me. So, you know, I don't have that, but yeah, it's so funny. What is it about creatives and emo slash punk?
Because like inside we're all sad.
Yeah. Yes. I went the rock route. I didn't go punk rock and emo. So I was like Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Soundgarden, Alice in Chains, Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath, just like
much cooler. Like
giant giants lifting slabs of metal and throwing them and crushing planets kind of stuff.
Absolutely. I love that too. Yeah. Excellent. Just in all of it. All of the, I know I wanted in junior high, I wanted to dye my hair black. And my mom was like, you're insane. Like that's, we also like the girls were shaving. Did you?
Yes.
I wanted that so bad.
Yeah. I didn't get to, I was too much of a goody.
Well, I'm so glad we found this connection point. Number one,
we should have been talking about this the whole time.
I know. If you want to come back and we'll just have like an emo revival podcast episode where we bring all of our favorite past emos and just chat about all of our faves.
You have to keep one thing in mind. Emo is an early 2000s term. For Kelly and I, it was punk rock. Emo came later. Emo came with Jimmy Eat World was the first time I heard emo.
Yeah. Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As the resident Gen Z, that's all I know. So unfortunately, that's what I got.
Gotta have some. We had to be grunge. Emo's, well, grunge and emo are both dumb terms, but dealing with grunge was like, come on, grunge. Don't call it that, please.
Grunge, I know, but man, that hit at the best time for me. I was
holy
like,
smokes. Oh, yeah. Do you remember? Okay, last thing, you remember it's like you were watching MTV and it was Michael Jackson's Black and White would finish. Like, and then, or Too Legit to Quit would finish. And then all of a sudden you hear, jun, de, jun, 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 and you're like, yes.
Yes. Yes. I played Smelled Like Teen Spirit just this weekend for my kids. Nice. They're 6 and 3. We're in line for In-N-Out. And I'm like so obnoxious. I blast it in the car, you know, windows, like so annoying in the line. But they are screaming with excitement. And then every time like the like comes on, my little one is like, turn it up, mom.
That's so great. Kids love hard rock.
They love it. Oh my God. It's their soul. Yeah.
They have so many emotions they need, and they don't know that they can let it out like that. And then they hear it and they're like, Oh my God.
Yeah. That's actually a really good way of putting it. Totally.
Like, this is what I've been feeling.
Yeah. Like headbanging is primal. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay. Well, I know we're coming up at the end of time, so I want to wrap us up. First of all, Kelly, thank you so much for being here. This was so much fun.
So
And I'm going to ask you your last question so that you can take advantage of all that work you put into your new Instagram. Where can the people find you on the internet?
They can type in my name and my Instagram will show up, or my LinkedIn. And then if you want to see most recent stuff, just onboy.com.
Love awesome. It. Thank you so much, Kelly.
Thanks, Kelly. This was fun.
This was so amazing. Thank you both.
Thanks for tuning in to the Closer and Closer podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review to receive the latest episodes. You don't want to miss some of the incredible conversations that we have coming up. They'll be full of powerful insight to help you reach your full creative potential. To find out more about us, visit www.closerandcloser.co. If you're a fan of the Closer and Closer podcast, then you're probably a fan of the Closer and Closer roster too. Spending an hour of your day with them is fun, but did you know there's an even better way to keep up with everything our roster's up to? Sign up for our weekly newsletter, The Dose, to get fresh inspiration from our artists every single week, along with email notifications every time we upload a new episode and exclusive freebies from time to time. Head to the show notes to get signed up and stay in the loop.